Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, drain the life force out of him.
Someone come drain me so I'm a Slim Jim, please.
Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast. The Lore Boys here. Hi, I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me today is Peter O'Donoghue.
Hi, I'm number two host on the number one podcast.
Oh. Dude, I got debated. That was my turn. I was supposed to go there.
Yeah, I was expecting
to get promoted.
I was expecting Jamie to go when I said Peter O'Donoghue. I was like, okay, now it's Jamie's turn to go because I said Peter O'Donoghue, but we kind of biffed the landing, and we've kind of spoiled the surprise that with us today is also Jamie Miller.
Hi. Let's, you know, I don't know about this start. Let's just can it. let's give up on podcasting.
Unfortunately, I am in charge of the record button, and it is also my episode, so I kind of going to go ahead with it. I'm pretty happy with where things landed. Pete's in second place. Jamie looks like a fool. It's, you know, where I want the podcast to go for our listeners, essentially.
It's our version of the Olympics that we're doing here on the show, right? Right. Except for the fact we're all remote. So technically we are, you know, smarter than my favorite name on the planet, Mr. Dick Pound, for the head of the IOC.
Not to get us off track already, but I was talking to someone at work today, and our email formats are something, our first letter and your first name and then your last name. So for me, it would be Jamiller.
Right.
There was someone with the last name Adcock, and their name started with a B.
Oh, so Badcock.
Badcock a. at email.com.
Hey, baby.
That's too bad.
Very good for him.
Oh my God.
We had Sarah Lutz too, which became
Sluts.
Oh, yikes. I'm a Palmer. That's me.
Yeah. That's just Jamiller.
Pretty Jamiller easy over here. And a Palmer.
O'Donoghue. Mine's legible. But I did see one guy in my address book at work today that's Blord, which made me laugh. I don't know who that is. I never will.
When you're bloated and bored.
You're blurred. Yeah.
You're blurred. I am blurred. Yeah. Geez, boy. We sure are starting at 8 o'clock, which we don't normally do, and are clearly already tired and a little half-sauced, huh?
Welcome
to our lore podcast, where we talk about the lore of email names. We also talk about Warhammer Fantasy, as you guys probably guessed from the title of this episode. If you like this one or the things we talk about on it, we've done a whole bunch of Warhammer stuff. You can find links in the description, which will take you to our website. We've talked about orcs. We've talked about Skaven. We've talked about Space Marines, Tyranids, the Warp, the Eldar. And there's probably more to come, honestly.
Sigmar.
We did an entire trilogy on Sigmar Unbarrogan.
So, Ethan, you mentioned that they could probably guess what the episode is from the title, but have we ever tried to guess what the title is before? I'm going to say Clam Blood. I'm going to say that.
Okay, Clam Blood. Clam Blood's a strong front runner. Pete, what do you think?
Don't bone the secretary, I think, because it's an undead guy this time.
That is true.
Not bad.
I'll go ahead and say too many cans in my sarcophagus. Now we gotta try and get there. We gotta try and get to Clam Blood. Gotta get to Don't Bone the Secretary and Too Many Cans in My Sarcophagus. And whether it's cans the aluminum kind or cans as butts, that's for us to decide on our journey there.
Cans, I would like to just posture cans as slang for tits as well, or boobs.
Okay.
So it go either way. That gives us some flexibility with that joke after, now that we've set it up.
Or earphones. I got new headphones today. These are my new cans.
I call most tools in my toolbox. Hammer, pass me that can. pliers, pass me them cans. Stepladder. Let me get up on that step can. I refer to it as cans. So we have a lot of flexibility to get there, if I'm being honest.
Perfect. It's like the French equivalent of a patente. You just patente, like that thing over there.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That patente. Yeah.
Okay, we're a little off track, but we are talking about Warhammer today. Just before we dive into it, we will be doing our mailbag. I think we may have promised you guys next weekend, but it's actually going to be the weekend of the 7th, August 7th. On Saturday is what we're planning to do, and we're telling you guys now, not because we're confident that we can hit that date, but because we hope you guys will cancel all plans to be there and then be hopelessly disappointed when we once again slip the date. No, in all seriousness, we'd love to do it, and that's the date that we're earmarking. So if you can make it to twitch.tv/theloreboys on August 7th at an undetermined time, probably mid-afternoon. Maybe early evening, something like that.
TBD.
Yeah, time TBD. Yeah, and EST, I guess, is also a good thing to say. If you're going to say times, you might as well say time zones, huh?
Yeah.
But yeah, let's jump in on it, huh? We're going to be... So today, you guys might remember from the last episode I did on the Skaven... a funny little scamp named Nagash. Now, if you haven't listened to the last episode, don't worry. You do not need any of it to enjoy this one. Honestly, you might even enjoy this one more. You might enjoy it less. Who knows? It's a crapshoot, honestly. But you don't need to listen to those ones. But if you like this one and you haven't listened to Skaven Part 3, then go listen to Skaven Part 1, then Skaven Part 2, because you need those two to understand 3. But you'll get a kick out of Skaven Part 3 if you listen to this episode as well. So, today's episode is going to begin in a beautiful and verdant crescent in the southern lands of the Old World. The name for the fantasy, Warhammer fantasy setting is the Old World, essentially.
This is pre-Sigmar, right? Because if you listen to those episodes, you find out that the world is annihilated or something.
Yeah, so we're... I disclaimed this, I think, or clarified this on our first Skaven episode, maybe. There was Warhammer Fantasy, which ran for a long, long time. Very recently, they've basically rebuilt it from the ground up, and they call it Warhammer Age of Sigmar. And we detailed, in the Sigmar trilogy, we detailed Sigmar, who Sigmar was, and then we kind of went into the end of the fantasy world, and then the third episode was the basis for the Age of Sigmar, which is like an entire new fantasy realm. Every other Warhammer Fantasy we've talked about since then, I think, has... kept mainly to Warhammer Fantasy. That said, like, Warhammer Age of Sigmar has some differences, but thematically, like, all the races are the same. The Skaven are still the Skaven. There's not huge overhauls. It's just kind of the history of that world is much newer. So we're going to be talking about Warhammer Fantasy, and this is, yes, before... We're going to start way before Sigmar was born. We're going to end way before Sigmar was even born, essentially.
Okay. And the Fertile Crescent, which was a real place in human... history in human civilization.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so this is the first human civilization. It's Warhammer's answer to ancient Egypt. So we're going to fantasy Egypt today.
Okay.
Woo.
It's called Nehekara. It is a land of ancient gods and grandiose monuments to them. Exactly the monuments that you have in your head. A god with a dog head. A cat with a human head. Big, pointy, four-sided objects. They got them all.
Oh yeah,
they got all the good monuments here.
It's an obelisk.
I guess those ones are five-sided if you think about the base. But
it's a Washington Monument invented by the Egyptians and their god George Washington. Obviously.
Yeah.
Famously, a man with a crocodile head and that curly white wig on it.
Yeah, he tied a triangle to a kite and it got struck by lightning and made a pyramid. That's the George Washington creation myth. Then he changed his name to Franklin. So Nehekara is ruled by dynasties, long lines of priest kings from the throne of Khemri, greatest of Nehekara's ancient cities, known as the City of Kings. So this is very similar to real ancient Egypt. You can think of the Khemri line as the Ptolemy line, maybe.
Okay.
Cetra, an ancient, or one of the first and greatest of the dynasty rulers, is...
Wasn't the Ptolemaic line from, like, North Africa and Greece? Because Ptolemy, like, Cleopatra's father is Ptolemy the Fifth or whatever, and he's Ptolemy, from Macedonia. Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
Where do you learn that stuff?
When you guys Wikipedia. YouTube? Same place you learn any of this other shit.
Wikipedia, okay. Wikipedia and YouTube, mostly. Sure. If you know another great line of Egyptian pharaohs, Pete, I wait with bated breath.
Oh, I don't know. I all I know is the Ptolemaic dynasty, and then there's like whoever Tut was part of.
So you know the most notable one. That's kind of the point that I was trying to make.
The famous one.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know any of them, so you're one up for me, bud. Yeah. You're doing good.
These dynasties, they trace their lineage back to the first of the priest kings named Cetra.
Okay.
Fans of Warhammer might recognize the name. He's a member of the race that Nagash, who we're going to end up talking about, rules essentially as one of the Tomb Kings. We're not going to get into Cetra at all. Maybe on a future episode, because there is quite a bit to him and kind of the birth of this pseudo-Egyptian Nehekaran dynasty or civilization. But we're not going to talk about him today. But if you would like to hear it, then click on the link to Discord in the description of this episode and tell me. And then I will write it down and I will do it, because I love doing ones that involve nerd shit.
In some cases, we may do your request live, because while we were talking, Luke Nukem 501 on Discord requested more Warhammer. So here you go, buddy.
So I mute the Discord server when we're recording, but he actually added me, which it doesn't mute. If you just mute for an hour, it doesn't mute direct mentions. So I also got that ping.
Now you all know how to get Ethan's attention. So yeah, just at him for everything.
Even while I'm recording. And I did say we're recording at 8 p.m., which might mean that people will be pinging me at 8 p.m. thinking that I'm going to be recording and I'm going to talk about you on the air, but that's not true, damn it. Huh. Okay, so we're ancient Egypt. Ancient fantasy Egypt, excuse me, Nehekara, somewhere around the year -2000.
Okay.
The calendar is based around the birth of Sigmar. So we're about 2000 years before the birth of Sigmar.
Okay. So like this Egyptian, fantasy Egypt runs in parallel basically with our current, physical Egypt, right?
Yeah. I mean, physical Egypt ran like way long ago, right? Like it started like 10,000 BC and ran up to what, like -1,000 maybe? I don't know.
I don't know that much.
Egypt was by like compared to all Western civilizations, like way outlived them. But it's because things went so much slower, like scientific discoveries, you know, mechanical innovations, all that stuff was way slower back in the day because innovation begets innovation. So
when they
time.
Combined the triangles with the square, that was the
big
one of everything.
That was a big one for them, you know?
Yeah.
The guys as soon as those Egyptians went 3D, boo, there was nothing stopping them.
Yeah. the guys before them did the shapes. So we're all familiar with the circle, the wheel. That was a big one at the time.
Yeah.
You know? The Egyptians started putting them together. Put multiple shapes together, and that was really when civilization as we know it took off.
All the people's houses before them were just a single wall.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You stayed behind.
Yeah. Couldn't keep you dry.
Okay, so Nagash is born sometime around the year -2000. He's born to a line of kings, of these ruling kings of Khemri, which is the capital of Nehekara. It wasn't always, but again, Cetra, this ancient king, kind of defined it as the city of kings and the place where this one city ruled all these other cities in Nehekara as well.
Okay.
So he's the firstborn son of King Khetep of the third dynasty of Khemri. Now, I know what you guys are thinking. I at least know what Peter's thinking. I'm not sure about Jamie, but... I never know what Jamie's thinking of. He's always thinking of the next banger, basically. Firstborn must be a pretty sick deal, right? But
That's what I would assume, unless you're a firstborn girl, because then that doesn't count probably in this medieval world.
No, Nagash is born boy.
Okay.
Assigned male at birth. And he's firstborn, which in a medieval world would be good. In a fantasy Egypt, well, here's a quote from Nagash himself. Nagash said this in the novel Nagash the Unbroken by Mike Lee.
Okay.
Had I been second born, the people of Khemri would have served me gladly, and the city would have prospered. If you would blame anyone, blame those damned gods you so adore. It was they who made me no more than a first son. It was their will who ultimately sealed you inside that tomb. So, like, whoa, crazy fantasy. Second-born sons are the golden children. First-born sons, chop liver, yeah. Man.
I see why Ethan picked this one, being a second-born son.
I do have some jabs at oldest children, knowing that you guys are both oldest children in your family.
Yeah.
I wrote them in, and both times I chuckled to myself.
I like how the Khemri at some point declared from the heavens that all firstborns shall be the mulligan, and then your second baby's the real one.
So it actually seems like the first son probably is the most cherished. But they give the first son to the gods. So they join the priest class, essentially, because it's like, oh, it's my first son. He's my most valuable. So I'm going to give him to the gods. And then I'm going to, you know, continue my shit with the rest of my sons, essentially.
Right, right, right. Celibacy for you. Kingship for your younger brother.
Exactly.
Dude, giving the oldest son to the gods in ancient times sounds a lot like sacrifice. I was happy that you said they go to the priesthood there.
Yeah, right.
That was also my assumption.
Yeah. There was a lot of it again in the Cetra episode. He sacrifices a lot of his kids to the gods, but we're not talking about Cetra this episode. Jamie, I knew that's what you were thinking about when I said not sure what Jamie's thinking of this. I was like, he's thinking about Cetra sacrificing all his kids.
That's all I think about.
So as the first son, Nagash was destined to be no more than a priest, a servant in the mortuary cult of Khemri, which his younger brother Thutep, while his younger brother Thutep would rule following the death of their father. So a lot like ancient Egyptians, they're big on death. They're big on monuments and pyramids, which are burial tombs, and, you know, interring the dead and, you know, scrambling the brains and sucking them out with a hook through the nose. Yeah.
Filling them with wax and putting a wick and lighting them and bringing their scent to godhood levels.
Yeah, yeah. Really. You know, wrapping them in linen and having them wake up thousands of years later to chase a Great Dane and a stoner through a haunted house. Like, right. All the classics, right. You know. Just regular ancient Egyptian mummy things. So he joins the... it's a mortuary cult. It's just like the priests of death, essentially. There does seem to be different... there's a pantheon of gods in this ancient Nehekara. I didn't look it up, but a couple names came up while I was researching. The death god seems to be one of the big ones, where lesser nobles go to the wimpier cults, and they go to worship the wimpier gods. The pristine guys, they go to, you know, you go to Harvard, or you go worship the god of death in Khemri.
Okay.
You have to be good enough to, like, worship a certain type of god? It's like a social structure or what? Like,
yeah, it absolutely is. Like, and we'll get into a couple characters who were lesser nobles, essentially, and were priests at other temples as a result. But yeah, we'll get there in just a few seconds. So
I have my degree in the university from God of the Harvest. They're just like, I don't think you're right for this position. We're really looking for more of a God of Death sort of guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We really want someone who will reap and pillage. Oh, not like reap like the God of Harvest would. More like reap dead bodies. Anyway, we don't like you.
Yeah. Really just an expression.
Yeah, you need 30 years of priest experience. I'm 20 years old. Yeah.
Try to buy a pyramid. They're way out of everybody's price range these days.
Everybody's 25,000 gold coins in debt the day they graduate. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah. Actually, the thing with pyramids is like one person sells it to two of his friends and then to two of their friends.
Oh, that's how the pharaohs did it. Yeah, yeah.
That's why they call it that. Yeah.
Yeah.
With an actual pyramid, that would just be like a roommate scheme where you guys just like share the cost of an actual pyramid.
Yeah, the higher up you live, the less space you get, though. That kind of sucks, yeah.
I have to be entombed with some of my buddies and this random guy from another country that we don't really understand. We don't see him much, but he pays.
Fun fact, first floors in buildings used to be where rich people lived, and it was poor people who lived in the higher floors until the invention of the elevator. And then rich people started buying the higher floors because now they got the view and they didn't have to walk upstairs.
See, that's why I got my basement apartment.
Because you're a rich guy. No elevator in the building.
Oh, I would have paid for a top floor place, but there's no elevator, you understand. So
yeah. My place comes with ants.
They're like little friends.
Yeah. Extra protein for your pizza.
So most of the story I'm going to tell comes from this trilogy by Mike Lee. I don't know precisely when Thutep and Nagash's father died. I assume it was when they were young. So before he dies, a cabal of dark elves shipwreck themselves on the eastern shore of the desert. So the desert butts up on a sea, and one day some dark elves basically crash land there. They were interred in the pyramid their father would the brothers' father would eventually take residence in, and Nagash took a particular interest in them. So these dark elves shipwreck on the coast, the ancient Egyptians and Hekarans kidnap them, throw them into a pyramid for later use, essentially. They don't know what to do with them, you know what I mean? It's friggin' dark elves, what do you do?
Are they dead? Because interring someone is, you inter a body, do you not, or...
Interned, I guess, is the word that I was looking for. You're right. Not inter, but interned.
Okay.
Like,
and this is interrupting.
And you are interpreting. And we're about to go to intermission. No, I wish I'd written that in for the break, but I didn't. So.
Son of a bitch.
But Nagash meets these dark elves in his dad's basement, dungeon. And is like, hey, this is like pretty interesting. Starts talking to them, and kind of realizes that they might have something for him down the line. So Nagash, perhaps chafing at the idea of a life of worship, despite perhaps chafing at the idea of a life of worship, did take his tutelage well in the priesthood. He was an exceptional student. He mastered the arts of the priesthood with ease. Due to his talent, his ambition, and a fair sprinkling of nepotism for his lineage, Nagash quickly became one of Khemri's high priests, the loftiest title he could have hoped for.
Ooh.
Okay.
Again,
high priests, they get to eat clams in Egypt because they're hard to get to.
Yeah,
Egypt.
Well, they mostly just drank the clam blood. But there's one.
We did it!
So, I'm not sure when in the course of his life this happens, but eventually his father dies, and on the eve of his father's funeral, he, you know, no time spent mourning, no rest for the wicked. He decides now's a good time to torture the elves in dad's basement, essentially. So,
oh no,
they're still kicking. And he's like, they got secrets, and I want them, and they haven't been sharing them.
I'm just so bummed. I need something that could cheer me up. But what could possibly cheer me, a student of death, up?
Hey, Nagash, want to go torture the elves in your dad's basement?
Either that or bone the secretary.
Hey! And he's like, no, don't bone the secretary. That's not cool. Come with me.
So he tortures them until they divulge their secrets of dark magic to him. So we talked about it on past Warhammer episodes. The winds of magic are a thing. It seems like there is high magic in Nahakara at the time. There's not much dark magic. So he learns it from the dark elves that that crashed upon the shores and were interned by his father. Okay. And that's where he gets his first little... taste of dark magus, or you guys remember what the name for dark magic is when we're referring to the names of the winds of magic?
Oh,
isn't it Dar or something?
Nailed it, Pete. Dar with an H. And Jamie, I'll give you the steel chance if you can name high magic. It's way harder.
Hig.
Yeah, it's way harder. it's Keish. just in case you forgot it, it's Keish.
I was thinking, like, what about street magicians for like dark magic? They just have like a candle, put their hand in front, blow it out, and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's dark now.
Yeah.
And these elves are the ones who are going to teach Nagash how to do that properly, right? The sleight of hand to blow out the candle.
To blow out the candle and not have people realize that you're blowing on it.
Yes.
You'll be a hit at birthday parties. So Nagash... again, either before this or I think after this, becomes high priest, the loftiest title that the priest class could ever reach. And it feels to me like he's still relatively young. So he's probably like, hey, you're CEO now. There's nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. It's a religion. So really, you know, we're not, you know, super expansive. We just deal in the desert. We don't expand outside our cities. You have a title now, but that's it.
Yeah. What do you do when you're bored and powerful? It's crimes against humanity. It's as true as it is in the real world.
Pretty much. So he's not content with the amount of power that he is. Full of an overbearing amount of Big Brother syndrome, Nagash wasn't content with the hand-me-down rule of ascension that made the kingdom go to his brother, right?
So, hand-me-down rule of ascension.
You gotta give him your old Oshkosh Bagosh clothes, you know. Your mom insists you give him some of your Pokemon cards, and sure, you only gave him Jigglypuff, like, who cares? But you got to keep your shiny Charizard. But, you know, when your dad's like, oh, by the way, you gotta give him the kingdom, it's like, that hurts, you know, that hurts.
And you can't just pick up a secondhand kingdom from somebody else by like conquering it or something, right?
Yeah.
Like you go down to the thrift kingdom and murder their king.
You go to a much smaller kingdom with a pretty good kingdom with a very young ruler, and you just convince that younger boy that no, your kingdom's actually worthless. I'll trade you for mine. You know, I'll trade you for this Jigglypuff card. And then he's
okay, playground rule.
And then his mom calls your mom, and it's like a big thing.
Yeah. First edition starter cards, the starter Pokemons, rather, are actually worth a good amount, even though they're fairly common compared to the other ones, because everybody wants to have their favorite starter, like their Charmander, their Squirtle, or their...
Demand controls the market.
Our other one.
Yeah. It's not... It's also, don't buy, or don't sell your cards right now. Yeah, the market's down.
Okay, there's yours. Maybe on Wednesday it'll be up, though. Maybe you just gave all of our listeners the worst advice possible. What if it skyrockets?
All the Logan Paul kids who bought their cards are all selling them right now, so they're just, it's flooded. Don't
Jamie,
do
don't pump and dump when we're not live, for Christ's sake. I'm gonna lose all my fucking money.
But you should buy Lorecoin. It is going up.
It's never going up. Look, I drew a graph. It's just an upward arrow. It's beautiful. Yeah. Right?
Can't argue with that.
Let's be real.
I drew the graph. Ethan didn't, but whatever.
Yeah, I came up with the idea for the graph and wrote it down and shared it with the listeners, but whatever.
Yeah, all right.
So Nagash begins to plot his brother's downfall, though in doing, he would show the breadth of his cruelty. His plot to seize the crown began with gossip, of course. Nagash would simply carve a hieroglyph saying, usurp me, and tape it to his brother's back with a gaggle of the cattiest death priest, while a gaggle of the cattiest death priest laughed and mocked him.
It's like tape a clay tablet to his robe.
Is
that true? Are there like rowdy boy pranks in the novel?
No. But this is purely Lore Boys canon. But I like it, honestly. And I tried so hard to come up with what a hieroglyph saying usurp me would look like, but I couldn't figure it out. I'm not that clever a man.
I'll try and figure it out.
I guess listeners at home, write in on Discord with your drawings of what you think a usurp me hieroglyph would look like.
I mean,
I think it's a man with a crown and then another guy like kind of like laying down injured with the crown off of his head. I think that's what I would do.
I would say
what if it's just like the picture of the sideways Egyptian guys, but just one guy's usurping the other one. It's like a literal photo.
Oh, they're doing like the 90 degree arm thing, but he's just yoking the crown with that 90
like
degree arm.
Plucking it off his head, yeah.
Got it. Yoink.
That's dumb.
So in actual, in Games Workshop canon, not Loreboy's canon, Nagash begins corrupting the religion itself. He turns their rote incantations into things more perverse, and in doing so, he begins gathering like-minded acolytes. The foremost of those acolytes was a cruel nobleman named Arkhan, a name which listeners familiar with the Tomb Kings and the Tomb Kings lore might recognize. And we'll get into, I will get you guys into who Arkhan is a little bit, but he's a playable model for the Tomb Kings, essentially.
Oh, okay, cool. Is he also a cranky older brother, like me?
We'll say Loreboy's canon that yes, he was an oldest child as well.
Okay.
He was also, that would make a lot of sense because he's in the priest class and he's a noble. So I said it saying Loreboy's canon, but actually you're probably right. He was probably the firstborn.
I'd like to see the author of these books come and defend any of the things we're claiming right now. He can reach out to us on Twitter.
I challenge you, Mike Lee.
Yeah, if you're alive, I've never heard of you.
So Arkhan was also known as a rake, which is a disreputable person, a rogue, if you will.
Yes.
Someone who spent time in the lesser respected temple of Asaph due to his relatively weak nobility game. This is kind of just what I was referencing before. It seems like if you're of a lesser noble house, you get put in the shittier priest classes. So he hangs out at that temple, which I didn't look up what Asaph is for. We'll say Harvest, though I think Harvest would actually probably be a pretty big one for these people.
The god of good enough.
Yeah. Yes, pray to the god of mediocre return whenever you can, really.
So seeking co-conspirators against his brother, Nagash promised Arkhan and other lesser nobles, power and wealth if they supported him. So he's gathering that clique. He's got his...
It's a classic coup. Like, that's what you have to do. Find other people, lie to them so that they don't kill you when you become emperor.
Exactly. So he's got his backbiting teenage priest cast at his back. Nagash knows that he has to take out Thutep's bodyguard first. This is something that happens in the book, but in the all the research that I did, which admittedly not the most research in the world, not as much as, say, reading the book, he doesn't have
good
a name.
Enough for a book report.
That's it.
Good enough for a book report.
He doesn't... Man, this really is just like the B+ book report podcast. No?
Yeah.
really is.
Just like, yo, Pete, did you finish Metro 2033? I'm like, nah, but I could talk about it for an hour and a half. Who cares?
I got like 75% through it.
The most I've ever done is for the Arthas episodes is I read a whole book, played through Warcraft 3, and played WoW. But that was just because WoW is so addictive. So that was easy.
Okay. Well, Jamie, do you want to get addicted to this episode?
Yeah, I'm in.
Arkhan will come to be known eventually as the Lich King.
All right.
Oh,
you in? That's the buy-in?
Yeah, I just put my seatbelt on my desk chair on, and I'm strapped in, and I'm ready to go.
Jamie's all in his high chair. You know, we've removed the plastic table from in front of him, so he can access his keyboard and mouse. He's ready to game.
It's coming off. We're getting into the action, baby.
Move the mic stand away, because I like to kick my legs while I'm in the chair.
One night, as clouds began to cover the moon, Nagash struck down Thutep's bodyguard, murdering him in cold blood. His brother wouldn't even be that lucky. Nagash subdued his brother and dragged him to the Great Pyramid, which their father was entombed in. There, Nagash buried his brother alive with nothing but the dusty old bones of the father who clearly paid too much attention to the younger sibling. The next morning, the blood of the murdered god and presuming some of his brother's struggle covering his hands, Nagash took the throne, and none in Khemri dared to stop him. So, presumably the king's bodyguard would be, like, the greatest warrior in the land, right? Especially in, like, a high fantasy world where, like, there's a clear discrepancy between warriors other than just, like, this guy's slightly stronger and faster and slightly more skilled with a sword. It's like, maybe this guy could do magic or something like that, or had, you know, divine enchantments on him. Who knows? He had a magic sword. God only knows.
Yeah.
So Nagash kills him and then buries his brother alive next to their father. Like, doesn't even go to the trouble of killing him. The quote I read you guys before, I'm pretty sure was him saying to his brother when it was like, don't blame me, blame the gods for making me firstborn, was kind of in reaction to this event.
Okay.
That's kind of fucked up, isn't it?
That's a little fucked up. It's no chill. It's no chill in the gash over here.
You could have had, just in this case, the courtesy of killing him, opposed to having him suffocate in the sand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Very much a courtesy. Probably die of thirst, because he was in a burial tomb, right? So.
Yeah, it's probably warm in there, too, and like a little sweaty.
Yeah. At least you get dad.
No AC.
No AC in the desert.
No.
And there's too many cans in that coffin for him to fit.
Got it.
1, 2, 3. All right, dude. I'm checked out for the rest of it. We got our mission done.
No, but wait, we haven't got to Arthas yet, dude. We haven't got to Lysia yet.
True. Okay.
Okay, you're back in. Come back. Okay. The reign of Nagash had begun, and it would signify a dark time for the people of Nahakara. Once he takes power, he quickly realized that the desert sand is always more golden on the other side of the fence. The fence being a barrier to more power, of course. He had long ago disposed of the dark elf tutors who had once been held captive in his father's pyramid, but his interest in dark magic never truly stopped. His newfound subjects feared his power would draw down the very wrath of the gods. So becomes king. No one dares oppose him, because that was a power move, burying your own brother alive after killing the greatest warrior in our country.
Yeah.
And now you're messing with dark magic, and people are like, that's going to piss off the gods, but we'll wait for them to do something, huh?
Yeah, they wouldn't like call down the wrath of the gods on the civilians, right? It would be focused on Nagash, presumably, considering these gods are real in this sense, right?
Honestly, it's always the rich people who suffer in times of strife and turmoil. Like, come on.
Didn't you see how broad the plagues of Egypt were in our real life? It rained frogs, and that's weird. I hated it.
The rich people,
first they had ants, then they had to wait for the elevator. It's
I know, exactly. It's ridiculous.
No way to live. It's no way to live.
No.
Nagash.
The plagues of Egypt were locust, frogs, broken elevators. It was ridiculous.
Those pyramids are tall. It's a lot of stories. That's a lot of stories.
Yeah.
So Nagash had this to say about it. This is from Nagash the Sorcerer, which is the second book in the next book in the trilogy at the very least, also by Mike Lee. I have defied death and laid the gods low. I am the master of this land and all that it contains. You look about you and see calamity, our small army in tatters, surrounded by our foes, but that is because your mind is weak, Ark in the Black. You let the world bend you to its whims. That is the thinking of a mere mortal. I do not heed the voice of this world, Arkan. Instead, I command it. I shape it to my will. Now, the more observant podcast hosts familiar with what I've just said might recognize the name Arkan.
No, you're right. You did say calamity. I noticed that. Oh, Arkan. Okay.
Ooh, Hawkeye Jamie right on the ball there.
So Nagash begins to dabble in necromancy. He more or less defines it. It seems like there wasn't a clear dark magic wind that was necromancy. There is no raising of the dead. Here, like ever in history before this point, and even at this point, there's no dead have never been raised. Nobody's ever been returned to false life or undeath. Necromancy tends to be like drain life, where like if there's, you know, a healthy person and you're a sick old necromancer, you can probably like drain some life off of them, kind of like a vampire, things like that. Oh, yeah. Things like that exist as necromancy, and that's what Nagash begins to dabble in.
Okay. He's got a little juice, you know?
He's got juice up. Yeah.
Did he coin the term?
Snap into a Slim Jim, if you know what I mean. A slim guy named Jim.
Yeah, drain the life force out of him.
Someone come drain me so I'm a Slim Jim, please.
want necromancer.
Well, it's like M4N, man for necromancer.
Man. So Nagash combines his mastery of dark magic with his inner knowledge of death gained from his time as a mortuary cultist. So again, this might have happened before, but it's really undefined, uncharted waters. It's like there's dark magic, and he's like, I also happen to know a lot about death because I spent decades of my life in the death cult, right?
Okay. It's kind of like when you, it's like he's trying to solve a problem because he hated his job. He's like getting creative about it. It's just like, well, if I just could raise the dead, then I don't have to do that shitty job ever again.
That work shitty smart, job of kids. Tending to the dead. It's a twofer.
Yeah.
Because the dead or the undead can tend to what dead remain. And then once they're all undead, you don't got to tend to them anymore.
Oh, man. Automation's taken away all the jobs.
Automation taking away all the good death cult jobs.
I'm picturing like Boston Robotics, but it's like an undead dog doing weird dances.
Just dancing away all the layman's jobs, huh? Nagash commits his research into 9 devilish tomes, the books of Nagash, which to this day, which is several thousand years in the future, are the most powerful sources of necromantic magic in the world. So still, if you're a budding necromancer, you want to get your hands on those books. That's the good shit, you know?
The modern translation, you know, the King James Book of the Dead or whatever the fuck.
Exactly. He also manages to create the Elixir of Life, allowing himself to be forever young and never the victim of harsh middle school aged ageism. Or middle school ageism. Made from distilled spring water, human blood, and chamomile, Nagash first allowed Arkhan the Black, now his chief vizier and most loyal servant, to imbibe it as well. So Arkhan has become his right-hand man, his go-to, his confidant in all things, and he creates this elixir of life, keeping himself young, and he's like, you know what, Arkhan? You're a good guy. I'll give you some of this. You want to be young forever?
Is that the Lore Boy's recipe, or is that the real thing?
Yeah, absolutely the Lore Boy's recipe. I'll say human blood. Okay. Human blood is explicitly in it. Chamomile is not explicitly in it, but it's also not explicitly not in it, if you know what I mean. It's not excluded explicitly.
Oh,
so
all right.
Very well could be.
Mr. Lee, come and get us if you want to correct us.
Yeah.
That's honestly not how you follow recipes, though, dude. It's like, they didn't say not put heroin in it.
No, they didn't. They didn't. Come get me, Martha Stewart, if you think I'm wrong. Yeah. Come get us if you think we're wrong.
When I'm making pickles, they didn't say don't put baking soda in there with the vinegar.
Never do that. Never do that. Don't even joke, dude.
I wouldn't mind a pickle volcano right
You want a pickle volcano? some poor 18-year-old fresh got his explicit tag permission to listen to podcasts on iTunes, listening to our podcast. Hears about a pickle volcano, gets all excited, blows his house to hell with pickles. Is that what you want?
Smells like dill and garlic. Yeah. That's my livelihood. Yeah.
Careful, that's a spicy pickle.
No! And it blinds both his parents.
And then he becomes a supervillain.
My parents were blind, so now I need to fight people who can see.
My pickle volcano.
my pickle volcano parents. I can't believe we didn't come up with that one at the top of the show, right? everyone's drinking the pickle juice at this point, right? Arkhan drinks it. Nagash distributes it to his other loyal followers. It grants them all immortality and incredible power. It's not just like keep you young. It's also keep you powered up juice. Like good magic, strong physical ability, all these things come from the pickle juice.
The Red Bull of their time is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Gives them wings, except not literally. I don't think any of these guys had wings.
That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, it
would be
makes ridiculous. You blind, I think we're saying.
Yeah. Like Red Bull.
Red Bull, it makes you blind. Sponsor us. Yeah.
Right. It didn't test well with early markets, but. So he gives it to all his followers, or his most loyal followers, anyways. It gives him immortality, great strength, but what he never tells them is that the recipe is pickle juice. So,
sorry, I was just thinking about like a Red Bull still out in the bush in Virginia. It's just like,
you got the pickles and pigeon wings, shove them in there, Cletus.
And they got Red Bull's all about the extreme sports. So, like, whenever you drop from the stratosphere down to the ground in free fall, you want to be blind so you don't see how bad it's going to be.
It's too scary.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he doesn't give them the recipe. He doesn't give his followers the recipe. So he gives them immortality. He gives them amazing strength, but they got to keep drinking the Kool-Aid and he doesn't tell them how to make the Kool-Aid. So he basically enslaves them to him, where it's like, hey, I gave you this great thing, but if you stop, like, you will die of old age if you stop drinking this, and I'm the only one who knows how to make it. So you better be good to me.
First one's free.
Yeah, they can't betray him, because if they kill him, the recipe dies with him, and they all die too. So unless they, you know, don't want to not live anymore, or whatever, you know, immortality really is, then...
Is it like Michael's secret stuff where they just have to believe
it was inside them all along. The pickle juice was inside them all along.
Oh, God.
So realizing he needs something to represent him and his will in the Land of Monuments, Nagash then orders his people to build him a massive all-black pyramid. The people of Nehekara, well-versed in the building of burial chambers, assume that this one would be no different other than the tint of its exterior.
High visibility in the desert. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
although the old pyramids used to be white and capped in gold, they said. All the gold was looted off the pyramids sometime.
Yeah.
Probably by white people. I'll come out and say it.
How do you get a black pyramid? Do you just like burn a bunch of stuff and put the soot all over it, or what?
So it's
you can use obsidian.
We're gonna get into it. It's not obsidian. It's a black marble. But we'll get into it in a sec. So the pyramid quickly becomes Nagash's singular obsession, and the speed of its construction and sheer scale of it would bankrupt the country. The truth is not that Nagash wanted to be buried there, but planned to use the pyramid to channel and harness the winds of magic. But to do so, he would have to go to war. At Nagash's demand, the Nehekarans marched on neighbors they had long had peace with, plundering their gold and slaves to be sent to Khemri. Nagash demanded tribute, and any who did not acquiesce were taken by force. So he sends out his armies. They run out of gold pretty early on in the project. They can't trade with outside factions where they need this black marble from. And so he basically sends out his army, says, go kidnap gold, get us some slaves while you're at it, you know, pick up a carton of cigs, and come back. If they say no, then we'll burn their house down.
Okay, so he's very much kind of like the Persian, or like Xerxes in the legends at this point, as far as like the great desert empires of our time for comparison.
Exactly. Marble, the color of midnight, was brought in from distant corners of the world, and countless slaves toiled and died for 50 years before the Black Pyramid of Nagash towered over all other monuments in all of Nehekara.
Okay. So how's he running out of gold if he's using slaves?
Because the black marble is imported from other countries.
So he's on a mission of conquest. I see.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like those are so distant that he can't wage war on them. So he needs to pay for this black marble.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like from the other side of the earth.
Do you have to pay to feed the slaves, or you just have other slaves cultivate the food for the rest of the slaves? How does that work?
Well, what slaves feed those slaves, Jamie? Do you ever think of that?
I guess they feed themselves. I don't know, man.
Feed themselves in the field?
Enough Stellaris.
Feed themselves in the field? With my wheat? I don't think so.
I don't fucking think so.
Some poor hapless Egyptian slaves just like on the bank of the Nile, just like chewing primordial wheat. Like,
yeah, like try to sneak a cheeky grain back to the hut between his butt cheeks or whatever.
Between his cans, if you will. Nagash's pyramid would dwarf the Great Pyramid of Setra, who was the previous record holder, verified by Guinness. The broken corpses of a multitude of dead slaves were built into the Black Pyramid's foundations, and magic sigils of power were woven into its walls. The heat of the desert sun did not reach the stone of the pyramid. Even in the sweltering afternoon, its blocks were cool to the touch. The light of the moon and the stars was swallowed entirely by it, allowing no reflection to escape. Clearly spooky.
It's cooler than the candle trick, that's for sure.
It's like, again, it's just removing light from the equation. It's kind of similar to the candle trick in a lot of ways when you think about it.
It's a bigger scale, right?
Yeah. Exactly. That's one big
instead candle. Instead of taking your handcuffs off underwater, you stay underwater for like 8 days or whatever David Blaine did.
Yeah, exactly. The winds of magic tore across Nehekara upon the Black Pyramid's completion, and Nagash's mastery of dark magic and necromancy swelled with it. Not all was peaches in the desert, though. The tributes exacted by Nagash upon the outlying cities of Nehekara that were so extreme that they fell into ruin, and people began to finally see Nagash as a tyrant. The other priest kings rallied against him. They refused to submit any longer and began to draw plans to overthrow him. More on that after the break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
There will be no escape, no blessed oblivion. I can end your life as easily as I can extinguish a candle. And before your corpse is cold, I can reach out and grasp your soul. You will be my slave for all eternity, and I shall laugh at the depths of your pain. Such is the power of Nagash. That is from Nagash the Sorcerer by Mike Lee. That was him talking about himself in the third person, in case we were unclear on whether or not he was going to be the protagonist or antagonist, or, you know, of this.
Yeah, he seems like he's threatening somebody with that part.
But I did copy down that quote earlier today. Did not pick up on the candle references that we've been making throughout this whole episode. So that was fun.
It's serendipity. You can't plan for that.
It really is. Yeah. Before the break, we were talking about Nagash's followers, the priest kings that kind of ruled the other cities in Nahakara, the ancient Egypt of Warhammer Fantasy, plotting his downfall, plotting to overthrow him and revolting against him.
Okay. He's got all the pickle juice in the basement of that Black Pyramid, I swear. We're going to get it.
We're going to get us some pickle juice, boys.
And we're going to share it equally, I promise, said one guy on the council.
Yeah, that's it. So they have cucumbers, but he's also bogarting the vinegar supply. So it's like they're gonna have fresh English cucumbers, but they don't got no vinegar to turn them into pickles.
Where do people get vinegar from? Like it's acid, right?
It's acetic acid. I think you can probably make it. I don't think there's a natural. I mean, there's a natural source, but it's probably like a mixture or something. I have no idea.
Sour cows.
Whoever did that first?
I think it's milked. I think it's milked from sour cows.
Oh my god, that would burn coming in and out. That would be
not if your body was adapted to it over generations. They're fine, the cows in my basement. They're living their best life. I don't know where vinegar comes from, but I did watch a documentary, or not a documentary, I watched a very like a mini episode on why avocados are so expensive from Business Insider this morning, and they called avocados alligator pears, and I thought that was such a fun name for an avocado. I'm only calling them that from now on, alligator pears.
I mean, it looks exactly like that. Those two things had a baby, so it's absolutely true.
That's cute.
That's your animal fact, I guess, for the day. Is avocados are called alligator pears.
If vinegars came out of cows, I think they'd drop the M on what they say. They would just go, ooh, all the time.
Very nice, very nice. Well, we've peaked as a show, so I guess strap in, listeners, for the spiral, I guess, now. The haphazard descent to ignominious demise. So to face the defiant priest kings revolting against him and his rule, Nagash used his powers to do what no one had ever done before. He would be the first one to make the dead walk. I said before, it never happened. Nagash does it now. Yeah. In response to all his human followers being like, you're kind of fucked up, dude. It's fucked up what you're doing.
He's got to automate it, right? Just like the robotics guys, they're trying to get the robots to walk. He's trying to get the dead people to walk. Just so they can take all their gerbs.
It was just, so in ancient Nahakara, instead of seeing like videos on your Instagram to upbeat music of a robotic dog, which will one day chase you down and oppress you in the streets, It was
shoot you in the back with a beanbag.
It was watching you know, videos set to upbeat music on their Instagram of a robotic dog made of human bones shooting beanbags at them, essentially.
Their drone delivery is just two front halves of a bird sewn together at the ass. That's the quadcopter.
The avian centipede, if you will.
Oh,
oh God.
The quintessential necromancer was born as Nagash wrenched the bones of the dead out of their rest to march upon his enemies. The mortal soldiers rallying against him broke and fled at the mere sight of them, and those that stood and fought quickly fell to join their ranks. So that's similar to what we discussed in the Skaven episode. Nagash was the guy at the end that the Skaven ended up killing with the help of another guy. But falling in battle against a necromancer means that you're his now, right? So that happens. This breaks mortal men in the world of Warhammer Fantasy. There's lots of fucked up shit that happens. Like it's grimdark, it's bleak. There's lots of different fantasy races. They all do fucked up things. But no one had ever seen this before specifically. So they didn't know how to face it, and they were really scared. Imagine you had never heard of a skeleton before. Especially one that walked about. You know, and that's suddenly
if us three were in battle and I fell, and then all of a sudden, like, sure, we're comfortable killing our enemies, but all of a sudden you gotta kill me too.
Well, no,
but just your skeleton, does the skeleton jump out of the body?
Like I'd stand up all drool like and come at you, and you'd have to look me in the eyes, and
I assume the skeleton steps out of the mouth, you know what I mean, like kind of like like,
oh, takes two hands, and then, yeah.
Well, yeah, takes its fingers, like, out of the arm sleeves of the flesh.
Yeah.
Gets them into the torso, and then kind of, like, just skeleton fingers poking out of the mouth, stretching it a bit, getting the skull out. And then once the skull's out, I mean, the shoulders are hard. Yeah. Once the shoulders are out, it's like a baby. Now it's like, now we're booming.
I'm just a Jimbo sleeping bag at that point.
and I assume the skeleton keeps you for a sleeping bag, because skeletons must get cold. They got no meat on their bones.
Yeah, you can... at night you can hear them all chittering and chattering.
Just rattling them. Yes,
the haunting rattle of 1,000 cold skeletons that drives men mad. No idea where that thought went.
You know what? Never minding, Peter. So city after city falls, but the priest kings weren't willing to go down without fighting. Putting centuries of magical research into the defense of their homes, the priest kings brought to life towering statues to march alongside their armies.
I've seen trailers for the Tomb Kings in Total War or whatever, and they do have like a bunch of like golems, basically. Like the Egyptian monuments we know they bring to life.
Yeah, exactly. So, spoilers, not even for the end of this episode, but for the end of a future episode, because... I guess spoilers for the Lore Boys podcast. This is probably a part one. They will eventually lose to Nagash, and all the technological and centuries of research, technological wonders, will all be used by the Tomb Kings, which is the undead race in Warhammer Fantasy.
Okay,
they're kind of cool as hell. I just looked up pictures of them.
They're very cool. I mean, they're the Necron of... It's funny, I almost did Lizardmen today instead of Tomb Kings, but I was like, oh, we just talked about Nagash on the last episode, so I felt there was a better through line. But researching the Slan and, like, the old ones, like, I did Warhammer 40K Necron, and if I had done Lizardmen, the closest episode I would have done to Lizardmen would probably be the Necron from 40K, because I talked about the old ones and how they created a race of space lizards, essentially, who were essentially the lizard men, and that the Necron tier end up fighting, which we'll get to someday. But all very interesting how it all like weaves together. The old ones created all of Warhammer Fantasy, so it kind of seems like the Warhammer Fantasy world is just a world in Warhammer 40K.
That's meta.
It's all super meta, especially when you get into Sigmar and the Emperor are like Sigmar from Warhammer Fantasy and the Emperor from 40K are basically the same person, but live different lives. And like Warhammer Fantasy ended and the world was destroyed and remade by Sigmar. Listen to our, I guess, Necrontyr episode, and then listen to our Sigmar trilogy if you want to know what the fuck we're talking about right now, and because you don't know.
So we were talking about the Tomb Kings. Can you play like control a Tomb King in Total War?
I think you need DLC, but yes, I believe you can. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, super. Okay, cool.
I didn't give that game a proper chance, dude. There were so many systems, and I just kind of like was overwhelmed after work. But I need to get into it again.
That was me. I picked it up. I played it. I was like, this is too complex. Which I do with so many guys. Same thing with Stellaris, too. But I said, this is too complex. Months later, maybe years later, I reinstalled it, and then just 90 hours of my life just disappeared in a week. You know, like, just gone. That's all I did, basically.
Man.
So, where we are now, we're in ancient Egypt. Nagash bringing these towering statues to life, right? In a grand ritual. Sorry, not Nagash bringing these statues to life. It's the priest king. So, in a grand ritual.
Right?
Sorry?
Arkin, did he turn? Is he a turncoat?
Nope.
Arkin?
No. Arkin the Black is absolutely still Nagash's most loyal follower, his grand vizier. But the priest kings, on the other hand, did turncoat. They weren't his, I don't think they were explicitly followers of Nagash. They were more just like government for the other cities. And they were like, you know what?
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm finally going to do what my constituents voted for me to do and not just listen to what some guy in Washington, D.C. tells me to do, right? So it's a fantasy world that we're in. In a grand ritual, the priest king summoned the spirits of ancient Nehekaran heroes from the realm of souls and bound them to plentiful statues lining passageways to necropolises. The Ushabti, statues carved by worshippers to represent the gods of Nehekara, grown to life at the behest of the priest kings. Necrolith colossi and Kemrian war sphinxes were awakened, ready to be directed to war. The combined armies of seven kings, accompanied by the lumbering constructs, converged on Nagash. So it's, I'll say it's not looking good for our boy Nagash, okay? If there's one, if he could have one fault, it's probably pride. Maybe excessive pride to the point of hubris. where he didn't...
But also, you can't bring destroyed constructs back to life using necromancy.
No. This is good old othermancy. I mean... Yeah. Not sure if it's dark magic or high magic that the priest kings use. Doesn't really matter. I think all evil in the face of Nagash is kind of the lesser of two evils. Barring maybe the forces of chaos, which threaten all life everywhere, which Nagash also kind of does. It gets super interesting, and maybe we'll talk about it when I do a follow-up to Nagash, but they talk about Nagash when he's after the Skaven, you guys were here, you were with me when we talked about the Skaven defeating Nagash, killing him. He does come back, but it basically just like his soul wasn't destroyed. He slowly builds up his power, and he's like, I'm just gonna bide my time, amass all my power, and then turn everyone to zombies. But the forces of chaos, he realizes, are gonna destroy everything before he can, so he can't be ultimate power when he actually comes back, which gives him his the hole in his plot armor, essentially.
The Lich King has to always come back so Blizzard can get more sub fees for monthly.
That's the ultimate evil, actually, in this universe. Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, bunch of fucked up shit going on in there right now, but we don't have to get into that.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly we're not a fantasy universe anymore. The assault on Khemri was devastating. All of Nagash's forces arrayed against the combined might of seven powerful priest kings with their backs against the wall. Nagash had made it clear that any who opposed him were facing nothing less than utter destruction, leaving the survivors no choice but to fight to the bitter end. With the likenesses of their gods at their sides, the living warriors crashed into the undead legions. Once more, countless died to satisfy Nagash's pride. Nagash's forces were shattered after the initial engagement. They were driven back to Khemri, where a brutal siege commenced. Arkhan, Nagash's grand vizier and still his most loyal follower, would die at this siege. Again, I mean, we're talking about necromancers. Spoiler alert, I already said it at the top. He's a Tomb King that you can play as. So, probably play him as an undead at some point, right?
Yeah.
One account tells of Arkhan holding the amassed armies of the Seven Kings at bay single-handedly, sending wave after wave of magic on top of an impromptu pyramid of corpses. So Arkhan's living up to the Grand Vizier title, I suppose.
Yeah.
And he's just holding literally seven armies at bay. Again, this is an account, so this is a fictional historian telling us this, so I guess take it with that fictional historian grain of salt.
Right. Yeah, I like how it's also like a pyramid of corpses, apparently, so it totally fits in with the rest of the architecture.
The wiki wrote it as pyramid of corpses, and I had that exact same thought, and then I said, you know what? I like it too. We'll say it's his own little pyramid, because Arkhan wouldn't get a pyramid. It's only the kings, right, that get pyramids.
And he finally gets that pyramid. So he finally, as a bitch older brother, he finally built the pyramid he always wanted.
Every time a bell rings, an angel gets its pyramid of corpses.
It's a trickle-down death economy. It'll be fine.
Arkhan's just got to work on his upstream. That's all. Perhaps as Arkhan's focus falters, a throwing spear would hit him in the chest. Staring in horror at the shaft, knowing it had pierced his heart, Arkhan uses his dying breath to utter a terrible curse that would befall any who touches corpse. I couldn't find specifically what the curse was, but I assume it's like, I don't know, your palms turn all fuzzy, you know, the worst things you can imagine would happen to you.
Fuzzy palms. You go blind fuzzy and palm. Get hairy palms.
Yeah, razor blade arms, pickle juice in the eye, all the worst things. Within seconds of falling, dark flames consumed Arkhan's flesh, leaving behind naught but a blackened skeleton. The people of Nehekara erected a cairn of stones over him, though whether to honor his bravery or to avoid touching his remains, it is unclear. So I actually did I had that thought about the Pyramid of Corpses, saying like, oh, he made his own pyramid in the end. But then they actually build him like a little cairn, which is kind of looks like a pyramid if you squint. And
it just uses all squares instead of triangles.
That's a caveman pyramid. The wiki did say that they did it because they honored his sacrifice, and then it was like, oh, some accounts say that it might be because he uttered a terrible curse on his corpse or anyone who touched it. And I was like, but it feels like the wiki kind of buried the lead and made it seem like it was more one than the other, which makes me think that the book kind of played up Arkhan as a maybe gullible follower at the time or something like that, where you know his honor and his bravery were intact, and he did think that Nagash was good for the economy, right? Which is why you would elect a ghoulish necromancer to state, is because it's good. He's bringing the jobs back at least. I may have lost my job at the wheat mill, but I got a job at the morgue. Stitching bodies back together.
Yep. The taxes have never been lower. The undead are doing all our work for us, so we don't have to pay the city workers.
I'd like to think they at first were just like, they just like put like a rope around him, or like the little like the four museum pillars with the little velvet rope just says do not touch Arkhan, and it's like teenagers would always just hop the velvet rope, so we had to opt for a Karen.
Or like the wet floor signs or whatever that they put up, just like a janitor put one of those, cursed body. Like, do not touch.
Yeah. It's got like a little slipping like Egyptian hieroglyph guy on it.
With hairy palms.
Yes, of course.
So Arkhan falls, is cursed. We don't know why the people built him a cairn. What we do know for sure is that Arkhan's sacrifice buys Nagash time to flee the battle. He's cut and running. He realizes that he was too hubrisful, if you will, he knew he couldn't stand up to the amassed forces of these seven kings, these big monsters, at least not yet. Maybe never, although I did already say that eventually we would get there because they're called the Tomb Kings, not the, I don't know, House Kings, you know?
Yeah.
Just regular people in their house kings, guys.
Just regular, the normal kings is like not the most interesting army to play, but they're fun to paint.
Yeah, reality kings, I think they call them.
Yeah.
Honestly, normie kings could just describe white people, right? Because we're like
kinda, normie kings.
We're kind of on top, but we're pretty normal. So, so Arkin decides to leave the battle. This is not good for his undead skeletons. We don't know if they care or not, but whether or not they know it, it's not good for them. Also, the rest of Nagash's immortal lieutenants, the other guys that he gave the pickle juice to, they had taken refuge in the Black Pyramid, presumably thinking that Nagash would save them. You know, all-powerful necromancer mage king that they served for so long and helped get into power. Like, well, he'll protect us, right? Nope. They don't get the honor of the burial cane that Arkin did. I think this is where the comment about whether for Arkin's bravery and honor or, you know, or not wanting to touch his corpse because he's booby-trapped. Because they seem to just be hiding, the other lieutenants. So, you know, maybe if they hadn't been hiding and had fought as hard as Arkin, we wouldn't be in this mess. Or
no caring for cowards, dude. That's it.
Exactly. No yeah. Caring for cowards.
I like
we
that.
Don't give you the folding yellow sign.
So yeah,
you got to earn that.
Yeah. You got to earn your wet floors, bud.
Wet ass F words.
Wet ass floors.
Like a 20-minute video just about that sign and how it's inappropriate.
So, at the end of the sacking of Khemri, the immortal lieutenants of Nagash were dragged out of their sarcophagi one by one. They were hiding in the Black Pyramid. They were hiding in their own sarcophagi, apparently. They were dragged into the harsh sunlight and executed by the priest kings. So they are also dead. Now, again,
I mean, good.
Gonna spoil stuff for people who are gonna listen to the Lore Boys in the future. We're talking about a necromancer here. So they're dead, but never not undead, I guess you could say.
How would you manage that as like somebody who was fighting a necromancer? Would you like you'd have to like keep people imprisoned from the necromancer army in like a really nice prison forever? So that they could live as long as possible so they could not be raised from the grave, right?
Or you'd need to like have some sort of necromancy that would destroy their souls. I think in Warhammer, at least, it's tied to... Mm-hmm. So like a lot of fiction, I want to say D&D included, but I don't know this for canon. Zombies aren't like souls. That's just like animate flesh, which I think Nagash's bone soldiers are. But people like Arkin the Black, again, a playable character, presumably he brings his soul back. And it's probably because he had like a great soul compared to, you know, Joe the Pyramid Builder, who had a wife and three kids and, you know, loved her, brought her flowers every Tuesday.
Wheat in his butt cheeks.
Yeah, a weak-ass soul.
If it has a soul, you have to put a dot on its forehead and then put it in front of a mirror and see if it recognizes itself enough to know that it's changed.
That it's got a dot on the forehead, exactly.
That's what they do with humans and animals to realize if they know. That's how they measure sentience in psychology.
I'll never forget the first time three guys in lab coats with clipboards came to my place, put a dot on my forehead, and stuck me in front of a mirror. It was traumatizing.
I had no idea what was going on. I looked exactly the same.
Yeah. Just nothing. Didn't even really realize there was a mirror there. I just thought it was some other guy, you know.
But I wanted to fight him right away, but I couldn't get through the glass.
I started barking at him.
So Nagash, fleeing the sands of his home thanks to Arkin Stalling, swore revenge. He vowed to turn the entire world into a kingdom of the dead, who would never turn against him again, and he strode north to plan his revenge. Centuries later, an unlikely king named Alcadazar would rise in Nehekara to resist him. Now.
Oh,
George Bush went after those guys, didn't he?
Yeah, the Alcatazar.
Well, it's because his dad armed Alcatazar, then realizing that was a mistake 20 years later. Alcatazar is the guy from the Skaven episode, isn't he?
That is the guy that we know, or the listeners who listen to the Skaven episode will know, eventually does get some sort of revenge against him, but you'll have to listen to that episode to figure out exactly how that happens. Yeah. I do think I'm going to do a follow-up to this episode. I think it's going to talk about Alcatazar, who he is, and how Nagash ends up back in there. Honestly, you guys might not remember, because it's been a long time for us, and we have the memories of Goldfish when it comes to remembering our own episodes. But the Sigmar episodes, episode 2, I want to say, maybe 3, at the end of the world, Sigmar fights Nagash's forces and fights Nagash himself. So if any of our listeners don't remember that, you can go back and listen to the Sigmar episodes, and there's a mention of this guy back there too. It's been quite a through line in my Warhammer episodes so far. Happy I was able to finally get to him. If you liked hearing about it, want to tell me so, then you can click on the Discord link in the description of this episode, or go to lorewise.com/about, where you can find links to all our social, including a lot of social which we no longer use, which we should probably clean up or start using. But we won't do either of those things by the time this episode starts. So you'll find all
in the next 48 hours, baby.
Not a chance. Not a chance. If I was a gambling man, I'd say no, thank you. You give me 10,001 odds, and I could be in charge of making it happen, and I would still say no. I'm not taking that bet. it's a waste of money.
I ain't logging back into Twitter, motherfucker.
I've been Ethan. Love to hear from you guys on the Discord. Well, even if I won't sign back on Twitter because it's, I think, bad for my health. I do enjoy Discord. I love everybody there. Let's hit some of the favorites. Fragile Shark, Jesterful, Fitty, all your other favorites. Terry, the hits. You know what I mean? The new guys. Anime Rules 1, 2, 2, 3. Yeah. Luke Newcomb. What was it, Luke Newcomb, who asked for more Warhammer while we were recording Warhammer?
Yeah.
I don't sleep, William. I'm reading specifically from we got Bray. Those are all online folks who are paying us, so that's
paying
cool.
Us. Oh. Yeah. Good call. Darnell, I mean.
How do they pay us? How do they pay us? Darnell. It's loreboys.com. It's patreon.com/theloreboys.com.
Yeah.
That's where you can go to donate if you want.
It's something like that. Jamie, did you have anything you wanted to plug into this before we stop plugging things?
My name in Final Fantasy 14 is UNICEF with an S and a PH, like Ceph. So UNICEF Erothia, like Sephiroth. So please send me some in-game money and stuff, because I want to get rich in that game.
Yeah.
So just get me rich.
Give
okay?
him stuff. Cool. Go fishing with Jamie in Final Fantasy 14, please. Peter, anything?
At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. Please, that is the only thing that you cannot really efficiently access directly through the loreboys.com/about.
Yeah, you can, though. It's very easy. You always say
this. Mr. Browser Instagram.
No, but if you're on your browser on your phone, it opens the app. we've talked about this. Talked about this on the podcast before. do what you
always
want.
Scares me.
Do whichever way you want, listener.
Guys, I'm so proud of this. I beat Risk of Rain 2 on the hardest difficulty this week, and to me, that was a real gamer move, and I feel really good about it. We should play that together too.
Was that before or after you bought your gamer girl setup?
Now I got my gamer girl set. I could beat it again, I bet.
As a reward for beating it is why you got all your new accessories, right?
You got a bunch of RGB peripherals for the fans of computer gaming, not tabletop gaming, that are listening to this episode.
I can play WoW with one hand. All of my abilities are on the side.
Oh, good.
It's pretty crazy.
But now you can keep your latex glove on one of the ears of your microphone while you wear yoga pants.
And I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Really, 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 it means the world to us that people do listen, continue to listen, and continue to tell their friends. If you think someone you know would like the show, just mention it to them. It's the best way for us to grow, for sure. If you're too shy or too lazy or too complacent to do that, then you can always leave us a review. Also, a very great way for us to get noticed by the Google bots, if you will. Leave a review on whatever podcasting app you can think of. other than that, like Peter said, patreon.com/theloreboys is where you can give us actual real money in whatever currency you deal in. And besides that, if you don't trust Patreon, we do have Loreboys Prime, the very special service that we've always offered to everybody. Way longer than we've offered Patreon, that's for sure. We're building a pyramid, but much like Nagash, we want it. We want our resources from far away, places that we couldn't possibly invade. So, any listeners in Montreal, Eastern Ontario, kind of all the way to Sherbrooke, maybe to Quebec City, don't even bother. We don't want your stuff because we could just come take it from you if we really wanted. So instead, we're asking from our further abroad listeners to send us your two things. Okay, we need your best pyramid building materials, and this is purely subjective, opinion based. We want a short essay detailing why you think it would be the best building material. And your second assignment is to then translate that into pictographs, and we're going to carve that onto your block in the pyramid, the reasoning for why that we think it's good. For example, I think the best building material for a pyramid is cans, of course, because cans can be anything, as we've kind of already established on this show. So surely they're going to be the strongest thing in the world. And if I had to draw a pictogram of why cans are the best building material, I would draw a fat ass just like doing work, you know what I mean? And that would be my contribution to the pyramid.
I think I would do baking soda chunks like into the blocks, like sandstone kind of thing.
Okay.
And my pictogram would be like an acid rain and like a whole pyramid volcano.
Jamie, come on. Some poor 18-year-old boy who just got his explicit tag on iTunes is going to be listening to our show, try and build a pyramid out of baking soda and vinegar.
And he's going to blind his house,
blind his parents. All right, well, send Jamie your baking soda blocks. I don't want them anywhere near me or my family.
You're putting your parents into an early sarcophagus. You know?
Peter, what would you recommend the listeners send us to build our pyramid out of?
Oh, any kind of sloped rock. I don't want to carve them, so I just want them to fit right in. You know, like a PC. These sloped rocks just don't fit where they don't belong.
Yes. You can go to Best Buy and get a pre-built pyramid if you're really.
Well, no, that's just expensive. That's ridiculous. You can put it together yourself. You can get on slopedrockpartpicker.com. You can get great prices. Yeah.
I would say if you're going to send us sloped rocks, send us new shapes. Don't send us any existing shapes. Just new shapes, please.
Yeah, make up a shape and send it over.
Make up a
Have
shape.
Have they done a pyramid with a star base yet?
I can't imagine that anybody's done that.
It's probably impossible.
A star cone? I don't even know what that would look like. Some sort of star-shaped cone? Doesn't make any sense.
No.
But I love it. I think that constitutes a Loreboys.
Loreboys.
Out.
Salutations.
Goodbye. My name's Ethan. If I could be any kind of Reddit armchair specialist, I would like to be a Reddit home inspector so I could judge other people's houses based on the safety in which their family lives.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm on, what's that Reddit with the dick costumes where people, you guys know it? There's like a whole subreddit where people dress up their dicks in little costumes.
Okay. I'm for it. Don't get me wrong. I was unaware of it heretofore.
I found it. I can't remember the name of it. It's like maybe Dick Cosplay or something like that. I'll find it eventually. But I want to be an expert on that stuff. I want to know what the best costumes are, how much work goes into it before and after.
Okay. Like a male genitalia beauty pageant judge, Reddit armchair expert.
Fashion, stylist, all of it,
A triple threat.
Okay. Yeah.
Dick enthusiast. Yeah. I think the term is just dick enthusiast, actually. Now that I say it out loud, I'm like, that's somebody who's a fan of dicks. My name's Ethan. My favorite string is the G string. Oh, like the one, what's up, a woman's butt.
My name's James. My favorite string's the E string because there's two of them. You lose one, you got another.
Yeah, two strings at the same time.
Yeah.
Every man's fantasy.
My name's Peter. My favorite kind of bra clip is the one in the front between the boobies. I find that one a lot easier.
I find them both pretty easy, I think. Like, if I'm putting on a bra, I'd rather the clasps in the front. Sure.
Yeah.
But I don't find it hard to put on the ones at the back.
No. I mean, I don't find it too difficult. I'm really more invested in the undoing of it. I know I'm not married and I shouldn't be saying that.
I do love taking them off at the end of a long, yeah, hard day. You know what I mean?
Just letting the girls out finally after working all day.
Absolutely. You got the boob sweat?
Yeah. Going? Me and my sweater puppies.
My name's Ethan. If I could put Bluetooth in any of my household items, it would be the toaster, so I could control toastiness at the drop of a hat.
Pretty cool. If I could do Bluetooth in just about anything, I would probably do it on my fridge door. So I could be like, hey, open that door.
Hey, Sudoku me, please. Fridge.
Yep.
Fridge, I'm Sudoku-less. You should be used for more than just liquids.
Posture check, everybody. Good. Straight back, straight neck.
Okay, straighten up that chin. Straighten up them necks, boys. Tuck the chicken.
Chin in.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.